Friday, February 27th, 2026. I really want you to remember where you were today, because we are going to look back at this date, not just as a busy news day, but as the moment the tectonic plates of the tech industry actually snapped into a totally new formation.
Yeah, they really did.
It's tick and night, sure, but calling it a news roundup just feels like a massive understatement. It feels more like an earthquake hit gaming, hardware, and AI simultaneously.
It does. Usually in this industry, you get iteration. You get a slightly faster phone or a game sequel that looks a little bit better, maybe a software patch. But today, we got four distinct revolutions dropping within, what, a six-hour window?
Basically.
We have the resurrection of a survival horror masterpiece, a 30-year legacy franchise reinventing its entire world structure, a complete philosophical pivot in how VR hardware is built, and AI agents that have stopped just suggesting code and started actually doing the job.
And that's exactly the thread I want to pull on today for this deep dive. We aren't just reading headlines for you. I want to understand the convergence here. Because when you look at the Switch 2 news next to the Empropic news, there's a pattern. It feels like the barriers to entry, whether that's hardware limitations or the difficulty of writing software, are just dissolving.
That is the perfect mission for this discussion. Yeah. We need to parse not just the specs, but the implications. Why does 1440p streaming matter for the industry's bottom line? Why is agentic AI fundamentally different from the chatbots we've been using for the last 3 years?
Right, exactly. So let's start with the fun stuff, the stuff we play. Resident Evil Requiem, it's finally out. And like, I'm a huge fan of the series, but I was genuinely worried about the platform split here.
Oh, the parity issues.
Right. Launching on PS5, Series X, and the fresh Switch 2 simultaneously. Historically, that usually means the Nintendo version is a blurry, compromised mess.
Historically, yes, absolutely. But that's why today is so significant. We've seen the technical breakdown of the Switch 2 version, and it is running at a dynamic 1440p with a locked frame rate. That is a massive leap from the 720p or sub-HD struggles of the previous generation.
Which implies that the hardware under the hood, likely that custom NVIDIA silicon, is doing some heavy lifting with upscaling, right?
Yeah.
It's not just raw power, it's smarter rendering.
Precisely. It's almost certainly utilizing a DLSS derivative. But the result is that the hybrid promise is finally mature. You aren't playing a portable version anymore, you're playing the game. And that matters so much because of the engine. The RE engine update here is pushing facial animations and ray traced lighting that are incredibly demanding.
The lighting is what sells the horror, honestly. And I was reading about the destructibility physics, too. In the older games, you could shoot a window, maybe break a vase.
Very static environments.
Right. But in Requiem, if you're cornered in a hallway, the environment actually reacts. You can blow through drywall to create an escape route. But here's the kicker. That noise attracts everything in the building.
And that changes the entire psychological loop of the game. It's a return to the survival roots. For the last few entries, the series leaned pretty heavily into action. It was really about firepower. Requiem strips all of that back. It's about resource management and tactical evasion. The new protagonist isn't a super soldier. They're actually vulnerable.
Which I love. It makes the scary moments actually scary. But for those of us who have been playing since the 90s, they didn't leave us high and dry. The return of Sherry Birkin,
yeah.
That is a deep cut that fans have been begging for.
It's a really smart narrative play. It ties the new, darker cinematic tone back to the legacy lore without bogging down new players who might not know the history. And considering Capcom has already roadmapped two free narrative expansions by the end of 2026, they are treating this as a platform, not just a single release.
Speaking of legacy, we can't talk about today without acknowledging the elephant in the room, or I guess the Charizard in the room. 30 years. Pokemon Red and Green launched exactly 30 years ago today.
It is a staggering achievement in longevity. And Nintendo didn't just drop a commemorative tweet. The Pokemon Presents showcase gave us the first real look at Pokemon Legends, ZA.
I have to admit, I was totally expecting them to announce Generation 10 with a brand new region. But going back to Kalos, and specifically trapping the game entirely within Lumio City, that's a really bold constraint.
It's a massive pivot from wide to deep. The main criticism of recent open-world games, and not just Pokemon, but across the whole industry, is that they can feel like big, empty fields. By restricting the setting entirely to Lumio City, they're going for urban density. Verticality.
It reminds me a bit of what Cyberpunk tried to do, but obviously in a very Nintendo context.
Yeah.
And the visuals, I mean, looking at the trailer, this is clearly leveraging that same Switch 2 power we just talked about with Resident Evil.
Oh, without a doubt.
The lighting on the cobblestones, the density of the NPCs walking around, it looks fantastic.
It does, and it confirms the fall 2026 release window is timed perfectly to push the new hardware adoption. But beyond the tech, look at the cultural footprint here. They're bringing the 2026 World Championships back to Tokyo. It's a complete homecoming for the franchise's birthplace.
It's poetic, and it proves that the IP has this undisputed dynamism, as the analysts put it today. My nephew is just getting into it, and I've been playing for 3 decades. They've managed to bridge that gap, even down to the smaller digital perks they announce, like the new wallpapers and that physical memo pad.
Keeps the community engaged at every level.
Exactly. But I want to shift gears to the infrastructure side of things now, because while we're playing these games, the way they are being delivered to us is changing really fast. Xbox dropped the Cloud Gaming Revolution update today for Game Pass Ultimate.
Now, this is one of those updates that sounds a bit dry on paper. A byte rate increase doesn't sound sexy, but it is transformative in practice.
Right, because for the longest time, cloud gaming has been fine. It works on a phone screen. But if you put it on a 65-inch 4K TV in your living room, it's been pretty rough. A 1080p stream on a 4K panel just looks muddy.
Exactly. It's fundamentally a bitrate starvation issue. You get those compression artifacts, the weird banding in the dark scenes. It looks like a YouTube video that's still buffering. Today's update bumps the stream to 1440p and, more importantly, significantly increases the bitrate allocated to each individual user.
So it's not just the raw pixel resolution count, it's the actual data density behind those pixels.
Correct. It pushes the visual quality past the threshold where the average eye stops noticing it's a stream. It's getting so much closer to native local hardware. And this is all powered by Microsoft's massive back-end investment in their Azure infrastructure. They are effectively upgrading the pipes of the internet to handle this load.
They also threw a bone to the handheld PC crowd. I saw specific patch notes for the ROG Ally regarding a shader delivery indicator. What exactly is that?
That's a brilliant quality of life fix. So handheld PCs often stutter when they encounter a new visual effect for the first time in a game because they have to compile the shader on the fly. This update pre-caches those shaders directly from the cloud. It makes the experience buttery smooth, and the indicator just lets you know it's working. Also, the general PC app responsiveness got a huge bump.
It's wild how much effort is going into making the local hardware irrelevant. Which perfectly brings us to the hardware story of the day that, ironically, involves more hardware, the Meta leak.
Ah, yes, the hardware bombshell.
So, data miners found the schematics for the next-gen Meta headset. And they're doing something that I thought we collectively decided as an industry was a bad idea. They're bringing back the wire.
It really does sound counterintuitive, doesn't it? We spent years trying to cut the cord and go wireless. But you have to look at the context here. The biggest barrier to VR adoption right now isn't resolution, it's weight.
The next strain.
Exactly. The Apple Vision Pro, the Quest 3, after 45 minutes, your neck absolutely knows you're wearing a computer on your face.
Oh, absolutely. You get that red VR face imprint when you take it off.
Meta's solution is what they are calling the computing puck. They are taking the battery and the heavy processor, which are the heaviest components by far, and moving them completely off your face. You put them in a puck in your pocket, connected by a single thin fiber optic cable.
So the headset itself is just the screen and the sensors.
And the lenses, yes. They're targeting a weight under 200 grams. For context, most current headsets are double or even triple that weight. This is the difference between wearing a pair of sleek ski goggles and wearing a heavy motorcycle helmet.
I can definitely see the argument for the ergonomics, but are people really going to accept being tethered again, even if it is just a cable running down to their pocket?
It's a trade-off. But if the goal is all-day wearability for work or for really immersive gaming, weight is the absolute enemy. And the specs they're pushing through that fiber optic cable are incredibly impressive. Micro-OLED panels, which is very comparable to what Apple uses, plus eye tracking with foveated rendering.
Okay, let's break down foveated rendering for a second, because we see that term thrown around a lot. That's the eye tracking trick, right? Where it only renders the high detail stuff exactly where you're currently looking.
Spot on. It mimics human biology. Your peripheral vision is naturally blurry. You don't actually need 4K resolution on the edges of your vision. By tracking the pupil and only rendering the exact focal point in high fidelity, you save a massive amount of processing power. That efficiency is what likely allows them to use a smaller processor in the puck in the first place.
It's a direct shot at Apple, clearly. Apple went for the all-in-one, heavy, but insanely powerful route. Meta is going for lightweight, distributed, and comfortable. It's going to be a fascinating battle for the market.
It is. But while the hardware companies are battling over grams and pixels, the software side, well, that's where things are getting a little existential today.
Yeah, this is the part of the show where I got a little spooked reading the notes. We had two major AI announcements, Google and Anthropic. Let's start with Google because the name alone deserves a segment, Nano Banana 2.
You really have to love engineering code names.
I do, I do. But aside from the silly name, this thing is a beast. We've seen image generators for years now, Midjourney, DALL-E, all of them. What makes Nano Banana 2 so fundamentally different?
Two crucial things: live web search integration and the absolute end of the spelling problem.
The spelling thing is huge for anyone who has used these tools. Up until now, if you asked an AI to make a neon sign for a coffee shop, it would say Cefeo or some alien language.
Right, the jumbled text.
Yeah.
Nano Banana 2 has completely solved the hallucination problem for text rendering. It treats text as a distinct, flawless layer, not just as visual shapes it's trying to guess. But the live web integration is the real game changer here. It's what we call RAG retrieval augmented generation, but applied directly to image creation.
Okay, so give me a practical use case for that. What does that look like?
Okay, imagine you are a tech journalist writing an article today. You can command Gemini, use Nano Banana 2, and type. Create a bar chart showing global console sales up to February 2026, styled like a 1980s neon poster. The model doesn't just hallucinate random numbers to make a pretty picture. It actually goes out to the live web, pulls the real sales data released today, and generates a pixel-perfect, accurately labeled chart in that exact style.
That is incredibly useful, but also, doesn't that just kill the simple graphic design tools and the stock photography market overnight?
It's a death blow to a certain tier of creation, yes. If you need a banner ad, an infographic, or a social media graphic, and you can get it factually accurate and perfectly spelled in studio quality in 10 seconds, why would you hire someone to spend 4 hours on it?
It's terrifyingly efficient. Man, it's disruptive. But if Google is coming for the designers, Anthropic is coming for the developers. They released Claude 4.6 today, and the key word here that everyone is throwing around is agentic.
This is the most significant news of the day, bar none. We've had coding assistants, we've had Copilot, but those are basically advanced autocomplete. They are passive. Claude 4.6 is an agent.
So let's role play the difference so everyone understands. In the old world, meaning yesterday, if I had a bug in my code, I'd copy the error, paste it into ChatGPT, it would give me a snippet of code, and I'd paste it back into my editor.
Right. In that scenario, you are the driver, the AI is just the GPS telling you where to turn. With Claude 4.6, the dynamic completely flips. You don't paste snippets anymore. You give it access to your entire repository. You just say, hey, there's a dependency conflict in the authentication module.
And then what happens? I just watch it.
You go get a coffee.
Yeah.
Claude autonomously reads the GitHub issue, scours your directory structure to find the relevant files, maybe across 10 different folders, understands the complex context of how they interact, writes the patch, writes a unit test to verify the patch, runs the test, and if it passes, it submits a pull request for you to review.
It does the whole loop. It's not just writing lines of code. It's actually navigating the file system like a human developer.
It is navigating, testing, and verifying, all autonomously. And the reliability is incredible. The error rate, those hallucinations or imaginary libraries that plagued all the earlier models, is the absolute lowest we've ever seen among the 2026 models.
That sounds amazing, but also incredibly compute heavy. Is it expensive to run?
That's the other shoe that dropped today. Anthropic actually released two models: the massive juggernaut, Claude Opus 4.6, and a streamlined version called Sonnet 4.6. Sonnet is optimized for speed, it's fully autonomous, and it is half the cost of the previous generation. That makes these autonomous loops affordable. You can have an AI agent working in the background constantly without burning through your budget.
So if I'm a software developer, this changes my day-to-day workflow immediately.
It increases your velocity by 5x for full-stack development, but it also changes the nature of the job. You aren't typing syntax anymore. You are reviewing logic. It's being deeply integrated into IDEs like WinSurf and Cursor. And honestly, it's becoming a prerequisite. If you aren't using an agentic IDE right now, you are bringing a knife to a gunfight in the programming ecosystem.
Let's touch on those tools briefly. For the folks listening who are actually building stuff, we want to get to these "so what can I do with this" phase. The source material highlighted a specific developer toolkit for this massive shift.
Right. WinServ Pro is really being highlighted as a big winner here because of how deeply it integrates that Claude agentic behavior. It's not just a plugin you install, it's the entire UI philosophy.
And Cursor Editor Pro is the other big one. I know a lot of people swear by its autocomplete and its ability to refactor huge chunks of code effortlessly.
Exactly. And don't count out the big players either.
Yeah.
GitHub Copilot is integrating these next-gen pairing models, and Google has Gemini Code Assist. The main takeaway is get one of these immediately.
Yeah, and actually, there's a smart tech and toolkit available with some exclusive access and discounts for the tools we just discussed. There are promo codes floating around. I think TechInSurf 26 is the one mentioned for today. But like you said, the discount isn't the real point.
The point is access and adaptation. You need to be learning how to manage an AI agent right now, not just how to write a loop.
It's a lot to process. We started this deep dive talking about a video game franchise from 1996, and we're ending it talking about AI that can essentially build the website for that game all by itself.
It is a lot to take in. But when you step back and look at all four pillars from today, do you see that convergence I mentioned earlier?
I really do. It feels like the friction of doing things is just disappearing.
Exactly. Look at hardware first. The Switch 2 is using AI upscaling to punch way above its weight class. Xbox is using massive cloud infrastructure to make the local console hardware almost irrelevant. Meta is literally moving the computer off your face into a puck to make the VR headset disappear.
And then on the software side, you have Nano Banana and Claude making the act of creation basically effortless. Or at least automatic.
Exactly. The software is becoming autonomous. The hardware is becoming invisible. The traditional barrier between I have an idea and here is the execution of that idea is vanishing entirely.
That sounds incredibly utopian on one hand, but also does it leave room for us?
That's the final provocative thought I really want to leave you with today. If you have an AI like Nano Banana 2 that can render perfect text and design a beautiful UI based on live web data, you combine that with an agent like Claude 4.6 that can autonomously write the underlying code, deploy the server, and fix the bugs. At what point does the role of the human creator shift entirely to just being an editor?
Wow, that's the thought right there. We are rapidly moving from being the bricklayers to being the architects, or maybe just the building inspectors.
Is the view nice enough? That might literally be our only job left.
Well, on that slightly existential note, I think we need to sign off and go process all of this. Maybe I'll just ask Claude to write the show notes for this deep dive.
I wouldn't be surprised if it already has.
Thanks for diving in with us on this crazy news day. Grab those promo codes, maybe check out the new Resident Evil to blow off some steam, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.
Until then.